What's up?
Oh, we're live.
Yeah, we are.
Awesome. Hey guys, this is a special episode. Cedric and I had a really rough week in Amsterdam. We are in prison, but right now they're allowing us to smuggle some of this equipment in. We're going to get this show out to you live. If we're shut down or something happens, we are not suicidal.
Live from Alligator Alcatraz.
Yeah, welcome to the Bitcoin Center podcast.
We're in between Uber shifts. Everything's sweet. We're at the garage waiting for the car to be gassed up. Better than McDonald's, I guess. They weren't hiring there.
So this kind of like, yeah, this kind of reminds me of this show Taxi, right? If Taxi had podcasts,
that'd be amazing.
That would be awesome,
dude. So you went to Bitcoin Amsterdam,
yeah?
And I think it's cool. Just I want to hear what it was like, boots on the ground, because I think, you know, get together with some other Bitcoiners and it's real world stuff. And even what were people talking about on stage, or what was it like?
I mean, the conferences are all fairly similar, but I think it's nice because it was smaller, like a few thousand people, so more intimate. You got more time to talk to people and find out what they're up to. The highlight for me was African Bitcoin Corporation. These guys, like, Africa is jumping to the future. That, like, so if you can imagine, right? Here in the West, we're constantly like, oh, you can't do that. Oh, we have to do this. We have to make sure we've got this license and this regulation, and we're going to get in trouble if we don't do it just right. And in Africa, the sense I got from their talk was that the population is so oppressed. They have no banking. They've been basically banking themselves with cash and, you know, human ATMs and ladies, you know, building like their own little fortresses in their homes to bank themselves. And so when they got Bitcoin, they jumped right to it. So they've just jumped to the future regardless of regulation. They don't really care what the government says. They don't care what enforcement says because they're already super oppressed. So like, this is a better way to do it. This is better for our population. And they're just there. They're already there. Everything's peer-to-peer. Everything's priced in sats. Mm. And I mean, I was just so excited to hear this, like what we always envisioned Bitcoin would do, which would change humanity. And it is happening in Africa rapidly.
One other account. This year's Amsterdam was the worst Bitcoin conference event I've ever been to. Nothing
Who
but
said that?
Suits
Who
and shit coins.
Oh, yeah. But
didn't have one fruitful conversation with a pleb or someone I didn't already know. Heard, quote, I don't actually own Bitcoin a million times. Will never attend another Bitcoin magazine event. David Bailey responded, I don't agree, but there was a time when having people attend a Bitcoin conference who don't actually own Bitcoin was the entire point.
Well, this is my comment on that. These conferences are geared towards educating people that don't know about Bitcoin. It used to be retail. It used to be plebs.
Now it's institutional.
It used to be anarchists and libertarians. Now it's TradFi people.
Yeah.
Now it's wealthy people in suits. Now it's business owners. So yeah, that's who's in the audience now, and they want to learn about
Bitcoin. I get what you're saying about the audience completely, but I do think that there's maybe a lack of focus at the Bitcoin magazine conference events. It's not, here's not, just a shame I get messages like this from well-known maxis. I couldn't make Amsterdam this year. I did see a video edit of some treasury bloke recommending Zcash at the conference.
I heard about that.
Right. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to say, hey, we got non-Bitcoiners in the audience.
Yeah.
Another thing to be like, we're putting non-Bitcoiners or people just really focusing maybe on stable coins or
I didn't see those, so but I mean, of course, I didn't see every talk, right? You can't attend them all.
And the best part is not.
And I'm selecting the ones I want to hear from,
which is great. There should be a menu. And
yeah,
I do believe that we should have open dialogue and debate ideas.
Yeah.
You know, but curation is interesting.
I did attend the Bitcoin for Corporations Day. And that was interesting because here you have a bunch of either like well-known Bitcoin treasury companies and up-and-comers, guys that are maybe just getting started, like Bike Federal and other smaller companies. And the entire hour and a half was about, what are you going to be doing with your treasury? How are you going to acquire more Bitcoin with your treasury? How are
treasury
you gonna,
strategies?
Yeah, not yeah. It's
digital
not,
asset treasury.
It's kind of like, okay, Saylor's doing his thing.
Yeah.
There'll be another strategy in these other jurisdictions, but what are you going to do to set yourself apart? Sure. And it's all about, you know, well, maybe I use my treasury as a desk to trade to generate yield on my Bitcoin. Maybe I'm using my treasury to lend to borrow dollars that I then lend into the community, which is African Bitcoin Corporation is doing that. They're borrowing dollars against their treasury to lend it to small and medium enterprises inside Africa, and others, right? Like, what kind of, like, by federal, like, we're building a circular economy around our Bitcoin stack. So we're moving Bitcoin in and out and taking spreads, whether we're selling the Bitcoin or buying the Bitcoin.
Cash flows.
Yep.
Whether they're denominated in dollars. And that's a good point. Shake, you know, has cash flows. And
good point.
They've started a Bitcoin treasury. That's important.
It's all about, what are you going to do with your treasury to earn more Bitcoin? And then what is your operating business synergistic with the treasury?
Sure.
So that was, I thought that was really cool because it's not just about financialization anymore.
Yeah, but it's not about privacy. And decentralization
issues with
mining pools, maybe.
I selected that panel. I went to that panel.
Yeah.
But there were, that's tough, right? Because it was packed.
I'm saying those other topics might not sell.
What I'm getting at was that the content coming across the stage, like if you want privacy, if you want sovereignty on Bitcoin, you need to go peer to peer. That's where it's at. If you're going to interact with the greater financial system, you're not going to be private. There's until you get to the position like Africa, until your economy fully collapses, everybody's out of the banking system, right? The largest part of their economy is unbanked in Africa. So yeah, they're fully peer-to-peer, sovereign, private. Nobody knows what they're doing. But it was like that with cash before. Right. So, I think the West at large is going to have a harder time obtaining crypto sovereignty and obtaining that peer-to-peer freedom network that we all wish for because we have such an advanced financial system. So, you know, it's going to be these smaller countries that jump into the future and show us the way.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, I think we should get into it.
Let's do it.
Exciting show coming up. This is Bitcoin Center. Brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. We got the crypto wallet. We got the point of sale and the Bitcoin ATMs.
Boom. Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Bukele.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there. That people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard of them a few weeks ago. Now everybody's talking about them. But is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is it just
debate that?
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
You do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, good. Thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man. I always get that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
There's some rumors that it's this Japanese guy, but they're saying no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
Dang, dude, we're going to have to change our or spaceman suits for orange jumpsuits.
Yes, or McDonald's hats. All right. I think, first of all, this is a great topic. Lawrence Lepard, he was opining on cash's optionality. The big print author tweets that holding cash in a crash is worth something, even with negative real yields. Wisdom or short-term bearish on Bitcoin?
No, that's wisdom.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. I mean, I've always thought that you want to have the, well, look, I'll just tell you, most of my savings are in Bitcoin, then physical gold buried in the backyard, and then physical cash buried in the backyard. And it's just the resilience factor of it, right? So it's like, what do you do if the, I mean, the Bitcoin is the long play. The gold is the, I can preserve wealth. And if there's no internet and no banks, I mean, I can do something with it, right? Yeah. And then paper cash is immediate currency crisis. You need to get stuff done with somebody.
But also maybe if there's a crash in prices, asset prices, and you could up some real deals. What he's really hinting at here.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're probably right. I guess I'm a little bit more of a...
Being optimistic.
What's the word? I'm a little bit more of a prepper.
I think
I got the prepper perspective on that one.
Yeah, I think he's you know, gold and metals are up a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the subtweet was, you know, he sold some, I think, gold miners or some gold fund that is up, you know, 2 to 5x this year or something like that. I mean, I could be off on these numbers. But so he was moving to cash and then, you know, because he's...
Yeah.
Whatever. So I think
I mean, look at bear markets happen. They happen frequently. So
yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one. The next one.
All right. So this is about the fourth turning.
Yeah.
And Tyler Durden warns that we're already deep in the fourth turning, and the essay argued that the U.S.'s deep fourth turning crisis, marked by institutional collapse, rising global rivals, and accelerating fragmentation, a major reset looms by the early 2030s with Bitcoin emerging as a parallel escape valve as trust in state money erodes. So should Bitcoin holders lock up for war, or is this just high leverage doom talk?
I think Bitcoiners and preppers have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think this was a great summary of, you know, the fourth turning thesis, but this talks about how this fourth turning is different fundamentally from all previous ones because of technology's role. And that COVID-19 accelerated this technological authoritarianism by decades. And, consider that central bank digital currencies agenda that's advancing globally while most people remain just unaware. And we see that every time we talk on the show, crypto and stable coins all around the world, in each country, in each region. And every fourth turning includes a monetary reset. So they kind of prognosticate on what could happen. There's three or four different outcomes that they kind of go over, but they really look at sort of the United States splitting apart.
Yeah.
China and Russia coming together.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, is a great piece, really interesting. And they talk about the moral bankruptcy sort of accelerates the fourth turning's institutional collapse.
Yeah.
So
no, everything I read about in this article, I agree with. I run in my mind constantly run different scenarios about how this plays out. So I'm sort of mentally prepared for every possibility. But I agree with a lot of what they said. One thing I would say is that I don't think we're going to have World War III. I think we're going to have lots of wars all over the world. Lots of smaller regional wars as we restructure the monetary system and trading partners. And right. Some people are getting left out or are being devalued and trying to repartner. Yeah. So I think you're going to see a lot of chaos, a lot of different, a lot of small pockets of volatility. I think the larger war we're already experiencing.
Yeah.
The larger war is social media.
Yeah.
On screens. It's messaging.
Yep.
And the difference between what's on your wall and my wall, your feed and my feed, that fifth generation warfare, that information warfare, that's been ongoing, and it's designed to create the fragmentation.
Right.
And so, I think people are going to, I think they're totally right. I think the U.S. does end up splitting up and becoming different regions. I don't know if they're perfectly accurate with the way it gets divided, but this is why, right? This is why in the previous comment, it was Bitcoin, gold, and cash. Because you need you need optionality and that kind of chaos.
So this talks about fourth turnings are generational psychodramas where every archetype plays its, you know, destined role, but something's different this time. The actors seem to be forgetting their lines. So the boomers are supposed to be sort of like the wisdom, and they're supposed to be like, hey, everyone, like, let's fucking settle down and figure this out. Let's solve problems. But they're just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's Gen X. That's probably us. Or just like, how do we fucking deal with this?
Yeah.
And just go homestead, go homeschool. Bitcoin.
I know. I was reading crypto, this. I was like, right? Yeah, you nailed generation.
Right, just how do I just go off and solve this every man's an island type thing?
Yeah.
And then, but the millennials are what worried them, or the author.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say half of them want socialism without understanding that socialism requires a social cohesion.
Yeah.
So whether he's not even saying it works or doesn't work, just kind of have to have a cause though. And remember, this generation doesn't really have, or the younger generations don't have something to unify or fight against.
Right.
The problem might be that the crisis is abstract. You know, like COVID was scary, but not scary enough. I mean, it had a 99% survival rate. It's not like Pearl Harbor, you know? But
I think this is true of millennials in the West. I don't think this is true of millennials
around the world.
So you take millennials in Latin America.
Yeah.
Totally different mindset. I work with some of them. Millennials from Africa, largest, fastest growing population, totally different mindset. So that millennial generation may be the savior of the future. Like, you know, they could be the next great generation, or I forget which one they match up with, but, they could really lead us into a prosperous future, but they may not be the millennials of the West because the millennials of the West really got the wrong end of the deal here. I mean, they were like promises just ripped out from under them left and right.
Yeah.
The American dream gone, buying a home gone, get a $250,000 college education and you'll be paid high gone. Right. Let's take like, they really got screwed hard, and I can understand the nihilism. I think some of them are finding Bitcoin and finding hope. I talked to Bram Cranstein about that today on our podcast, yeah. Bifederal. And I think it's divided, right? There are some nihilistic groups and there's some hopeful groups. So it's just going to be less cohesive here in the West, I think.
Yeah, all eyes on Taiwan. Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one.
All right.
Consumer spending can't grow mathematically unless stocks rise. And we highlighted that at the time. It was very controversial. My point is, it's not controversial anymore. Everybody knows that everybody knows that A, the stock market is effectively the economy. B, they need it to fund the treasury market. And C, therefore, any dips are to be bought because you take stocks down 20-25%, which earlier in our careers was like, okay, kind of a nasty correction, but so what? Now, if stocks drop 20-25% and stay there for long enough, receipts are going to drop 15-20% within 3 to 4 months, and we won't be able to afford to pay the entitlements plus the interest. Forget about defense, forget about national parks, education, labor, all the other. We won't be able to pay entitlements and interest if your stocks fall 20-25% and stay there for a few months. So my point here is that everybody knows that everybody knows stocks can't fall long. And I think it's rapidly being understood, and we know mechanically the plumbing is in place or being put in place to keep this going and ameliorate any sell-offs. So to me, I think what stops it is more inflation and politics, political instability. And we're starting to see that, but you know, it's not quite there enough. But I think the everybody knows portion of this is a dangerous point in time, because it just means more and more the bond market's going to sell itself faster and faster to the Fed. And that's really good for gold. It's really good for Bitcoin. I think it's great for the stock market in dollars. I think stocks will keep falling in gold terms and Bitcoin terms over time. But, you know.
What do you think he's describing there?
Well, I follow Luke. So that's not new messaging for Luke. And I think secularly, totally correct. Like long term, totally correct. But I do feel like, you know, don't put a line in the sand at 25% and buy it. Like, I think that could also be translated to deeper, sharper, faster corrections. Mm. And I mean, there's no better way to unite politicians. There's no better way to get everybody aligned with the central bank than a good crisis, right? If you need to refinance $9 trillion next year, you need interest, you need to fix or make housing more affordable. You need to get the Democrats and the Republicans to all of a sudden agree on something. Nothing better than down 40%. I mean, COVID was a great example of that, yeah, right?
I agree.
And it doesn't have to be a COVID-like event. It could just be the end of the business cycle.
This is what Larry's getting at. I mean, he's waiting for the big print, but we could get a big crash first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the optionality there and survival is going to be important in liquidity.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Yep. Right, so and then Luke says this over and over and over again. Don't take leverage. Just be long-term accumulating gold and Bitcoin.
Right. Good advice.
Yeah. So, all right.
This one's juicy. Let's go.
If you knew who owned Bitcoin or who started Bitcoin, you had Bitcoin, you couldn't sleep at night. I know. 100%. And when the real founder of Bitcoin comes out, it is my humble opinion, and there's nothing humble about me, Bitcoin will go to fucking zero.
One day.
In a microsecond. Whoop.
I mean, obviously the conflation there is that Epstein is Satoshi.
Do you think so?
No, I don't think so. But I think also, you know, but I don't, I think the conflation meaning with the latest news. I don't know what that guy's.
I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, that clip was not directly related to.
No, it's not directly related. Okay. It's just conflated.
Sure.
It's being recycled, right?
Yeah.
But I think the Epstein thing, you know, I think here, this is more slander and sort of like a boogeyman. And
there's nothing in the Epstein files.
There's nothing in it. No,
but are we still talking about that?
Well, there's interest here. There is interest from Epstein in Bitcoin. No, but it's like, look, Epstein drinks water and breathes air. Doesn't mean that those things are bad.
I was just being a smart ass.
No, I get it. But what it does for me, though, what I want to explore is, you know, I do think that.
But wait, do we even explain that this is because?
No, I guess we didn't explain.
Jeffrey Epstein's emails suggest that some of his money financed Bitcoin Core.
Right. And there's a notion of either it was like 850,000 or around 7.5 million. And some of it might have went through Leon Black going to MIT.
Mm-hmm.
But in the emails, it's clear MIT is trying to fund Core developers.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem nefarious on top.
Right.
And of course, MIT is at the cutting edge of technology. Mm-hmm. They got the MIT license, which is open source.
Right.
But what I do think is interesting.
And I'm sure Epstein funded. Lots of scientific projects.
But he was very clever about.
Yes, sure.
I mean, he was interested in some obscure cutting edge technology.
Yep.
So, and I think he was also involved in probably high end money laundering schemes and tax evasion, which all crypto can help. But what I think is interesting is is the comment about Gavin. So Gavin is clever. So in my mind, Gavin's captured.
Mm-hmm.
And they like what Gavin's doing. Gavin goes on to other projects. He's a big blocker. So I think that it seems like nefarious interests want bigger blocks, in my mind.
Yeah, right.
That's what I get from this.
Right.
And then you would also think that they'd want to steer it towards lack of privacy.
Right.
It is a public blockchain.
Right.
So if you think if the government started it to bridge their way to stable coins in a panopticon.
I think that's a reach.
I'm not saying that they started.
Because I do agree that like government started it.
Right.
I do believe the people within the DOD, right. DARPA.
And so I think they're trying to start as much as they can.
But I also believe that it got out. It got open sourced. And through that open sourcing process, but I think that's a real let's open source this so we get stable coins. That argument has never.
No, but I think the argument there. I'm not trying to make the argument that these are mine. I'm trying to raise arguments.
Yeah, no. I get it. I know.
But that it was open source. So
you're playing devil's advocate.
So that the community could be built around it. They could iron out the kinks. They could kind of build a fervor.
But I mean, stablecoins
here, anarcho-libertarianism.
But stablecoins are so like this is not an ushering in of stablecoins because stablecoins are so much different than Bitcoin. It's a totally different system.
I agree with
right?
you. I don't think they're similar.
Stablecoins are e-cash. I mean,
stablecoins are bullshit. But and they're a panopticon. But you need you. Well, I think now stablecoins rely on the narrative of Bitcoin existing and not failing. So I think I think if Bitcoin goes to zero, I don't think the stablecoin.
Oh no, stablecoins will be around.
Even if Bitcoin goes to zero.
Oh, 100%.
Sure, at this point. But I mean, I'm thinking that it kind of helped bridgehead the idea of crypto, even though stablecoins are not actual crypto currencies. And I think
the
that,
only connection I see there is that people start using, you know, the Lightning Network for cheap, fast remittances and payments. And they said, boy, gee, it would be great if we could do this without paying capital gains tax.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
So you tax
can it. We have all the benefits right. of the speed and the,
keep
and the
it
settlement
and non-private.
Yes, right.
And you centralize it
but,
as much as possible
but that's not
around
Bitcoin. Lightning's not even Bitcoin, right? I mean, it's sure. it's not main chain Bitcoin. So it's totally that. Different. And so I think it's
I'm saying if I was the government, I created yeah. this thing and it got out or I let it out, then I would do everything I could around it to
well go back to Chom's eCash, right? Let's yeah. say eCash wasn't shut down because it was living on one server. And because it threatened the government, if eCash came out in 1986 or whenever, and everyone went like, whoa, hey, the government likes this thing. We can now send dollars digitally through the internet, instant settlement for free.
Right.
People would have been like, yeah, let's fucking do that. So to me, it shows you that the government came into stablecoins after the cat had been let out of the bag and they had no other option but like we got to go with this. We're dying. The debt-based dollar system is dying. This is a way for us to sell treasuries.
Right.
So instead of fighting it, let's just adopt it. That and so I look at this as like the cat got out of the bag. People start using it. Countries start adopting it. Individuals are getting wealthy with it. Now we got to try and get some of the sausage back in the casing so that we don't completely die and we don't get completely replaced, meaning the government and the institutions. And you pile that on top of the pressure of the fourth turning, collapsing the value of these institutions, they're desperate to get the sausage back in, right? They're like, holy smokes, this shit's out there. And then you see what Africa's doing. And El Salvador is doing, and the Czech Republic now saying, well, you know, I mean, we're going to test a little of this Bitcoin stuff. To me, this is just getting back to the Epstein thing, Epstein financing a bunch of stuff that they thought, you know, that we got to be on top of all this and maybe get in and yeah. control so it.
I'm not
and
saying
use
Epstein
it.
Financed Bitcoin.
Right.
I'm saying he tried to steer development.
Yeah. And that,
towards bigger blocks.
Possibly.
And whatever would be beneficial to people who don't
sure so they could control it.
State from money
yeah
right or just a control aspects right. of it or try to
right
not even succeed
and
maybe.
This is the thing about the way Bitcoin is constructed if we ever get to that point there will be a hard fork to a more sovereign network again
fair enough right but we need something that is used as money.
Right.
Not just savings.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be store value first, but it has to be used as money.
I mean, it started as black market
money.
We
probably have to improve
it. It could
privacy.
Go back to black market money. And
yeah.
And, you know, that's why we have Zcash.
Oh, shut up. Okay, let's move on. This hit like and subscribe. This is Bitcoin Center brought to you by Byte Federal Bitcoin ATMs.
Right.
Self custody. run a node and stamp your seed phrase. Jack, is this number five, Jack Maller?
Yeah, it's you.
Bitcoin as the system's liquidity smoke alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Jack argues gold's breakout shows fiat is failing, while Bitcoin's sell-off reveals deeper cracks. Does Bitcoin's volatility truly expose hidden stresses that legacy markets can or won't reflect? What's your thoughts?
I think he nailed it with that comment. Hmm. Absolutely nailed it. This is why you've seen such a discrepancy between gold and Bitcoin right now. Because when central banks are understanding the reset is coming, fiat is dying, and they're going to move money to an asset that they can control and that they understand.
Yeah.
That they know liquidity. Is going to be the collateral for the restructuring of global trade. Now, so that's why we're seeing such a massive boom in gold. While simultaneously, Bitcoin, which is tied to global liquidity, is saying, yo, liquidity's drying up. Repo market's blowing, you know, starting to boil over. The business cycle's rolling over. Unemployment, deflation could be coming. This is not good for global liquidity. And Bitcoin's going like, yeah, we're not going there because this is not looking good. Bitcoin is that canary in the coal mine, that the only free market that tells you what's really happening in the economy long before it hits the stock market. So I think that was so much wisdom in two or three lines that he wrote. I was like, well done. Like, so yeah. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, Jack, sometimes spot on. Let's move on to the lightning round. This is Byte. Bitcoin says, what did the Byte know?
All right. Kenya legalizes crypto payments. With Kenya's parliament passing a virtual asset service provider, has Africa's fintech frontier finally legalized Bitcoin and commerce, or will heavy regulation snuff out innovation?
Probably both. I think that this is just everyone around the world is paving the way for crypto payments. Again, I think this is very little to do with Bitcoin and more to do just regulatory headwinds kind of knocked down and clearing the path. I don't think we should spend a lot of time on
We don't need to. I think we've talked about Africa a lot. I think this is Kenya's parliament getting on the program with whatever other nation is doing, but I don't think their people give a shit.
No. I don't think
next.
All right. Cash App enables Bitcoin payments. Ken Block's Cash App turned Bitcoin into everyday money by letting users pay merchants with Bitcoin over the Lightning Network.
I mean, they're pushing it hard, man. They got the advertising going. They're telling, you know, trying to get the capital gains out of the payment processing of Bitcoin.
By letting you pay in cash.
No, not the stablecoin stuff that they implemented.
No, I believe that. Oh, you'll explain it, but I thought.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's two things they're doing. You're right, right? So they're going to allow stablecoins on their platform, which, you know, so they're going
to. But you can pay in Bitcoin by using cash yourself, and they'll convert it to Bitcoin for you, pay the merchant Bitcoin.
And oh, they will?
That's what I heard.
Okay.
I saw in a tweet.
Okay, I didn't see that part.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
You're not using your Bitcoin.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
Right. So it makes sense. So you could pay in dollars and the merchant could choose to accept Bitcoin.
And it lets you know the merchant's request.
So you don't have a capital gains and the merchant doesn't either.
Right.
That's smart.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were doing that. That's really cool.
But you would think that's all they would allow. Because I think right now by allowing people to, and I don't know what they're allowing and how it's treated.
I mean, you can use their platform I use it to pay. I used it in Amsterdam to buy.
Got it. So let's say you went on your Cash App 5 years ago
right.
and bought $10 in Bitcoin, and it's now worth $100. And you go buy the coffee.
Yeah.
Or you buy two sweatshirts in Amsterdam for $100. Do you owe $90? Do you have $90 in capital gains that you're
yes.
Are you going to get a 1090? You're not.
They are going to give you.
They're going to give you the.
Well, if you bought it on their platform, right?
Or either way, you'll get it with a zero cost basis. So you'll pay them
yes.
probably 100%.
You'll have to show games. Your cost basis, right?
Right.
If sent them your Bitcoin.
So I think they're, in my opinion, it sounds like they're walking a lot of people into a nightmare.
Yes and no, except that if you use it properly, right? Like the way I use Bitcoin payments on any wallet is I buy it
and then use
on
it right
the
away.
Wallet, spend it on the wallet, and refill.
No, I get what you're saying. So you kind of have like
this keep it in a walled garden.
I get what you mean.
Yeah,
no, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know if everyone's doing that and they don't know what the implications are.
Well, if you're not, so it's interesting. You should do it that
to
way.
Me, it's very interesting that Cash App's rolling this out.
Yeah.
Kind of nonchalantly like that. Because does it speak to them knowing that the government's not going to tax all this?
Yeah, I don't
or
know.
Or are they going to be like, we're going to try to manage all of this back end nightmare of
well, reporting? 1099. D's are coming.
Yeah, no, I get that they're coming.
Yeah,
but now we're like encouraging sort of much more. Like a lot of people are going to be. I didn't know I'm going to owe this much in taxes based on I bought a couple sweatshirts.
I had the same intuition or same question when I heard.
And it'll be interesting when people start buying.
Does Jack know that like this is coming?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at, right?
But at the same time, right, he's running a massive advertising campaign trying
to get people on it. And they're
to try and tell the government to stop taxing crypto payments.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's all PR.
Which to me is the holy grail.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to the next one here.
Lean miners. So Marathon CEO warns next halving will only allow miners with subsidized power or ownership stakes to survive. Is mining now a capital-intensive club that undermines decentralization or a Darwinian filter that leaves only the fittest?
Oh, man, it's Darwinian. Mining sucks. Yeah. I mine.
It's Darwinian.
It's hard, man. And with this kind of way the market's been, the sideways chopping,
it's hard,
and
but
then
it's,
the hash rate rising dramatically.
It's hard if you were going to make a business out of it.
Yeah, well, I invested
for an individual farm. For an individual to get the 100% expense.
Sure, up front.
The depreciation in the same year.
Yeah,
that's a win.
Yep.
And then you get your Bitcoin over time. You get that money back over time. Yep. And that's pretty. There are ways to work. That kind of supports mining decentralization. That really incentivized me to buy some miners.
But
for
margins
myself.
Are slim if you're looking to do it on sort of a profit margin basis. And I also think
trying to make a business out of it.
I think to what he's saying, I think I agree 100%. I think in the future, it's going to be everyone's going to be mining at a loss, and it's going to be strategic. Like countries, nation states, like we're mining at a loss,
right?
Or a negligible gain because we want to guarantee that our transactions get
pooled. I fully anticipate that countries will subsidize the power in order to be able to transact freely on the network.
And I think there'll be forward
when
contracts
and how they will.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, it's all blocks, coming.
Timing. Yeah,
yeah, I've talked to a couple organizations that are building that.
Let's move on to the next one. All right, last gasp liquidity. Credit bubble bulletin warns markets are in a liquidity fueled froth. If Bitcoin ETFs rode that tide, will a Fed pivot send them crashing?
A Fed pivot send them crashing?
Yeah.
What's a Fed pivot? Higher rates?
Lower rates, I guess. I mean, credit bubble bubble bulletin warns markets are in liquidity fueled froth.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
All right. I guess pivot maybe to higher.
Okay. So, I think. There's really nothing new here other than the fact that we've got a crunch in liquidity. You're seeing it in the repo markets. You're seeing, hints that we're going to stop quantitative tightening, right? But it's like, is the loosening of credit, is the lowering of rates, is the increase in liquidity going to come fast enough to prevent a crash? I don't think so.
I think the crash is right. coming. I don't know.
I think the crash is exactly what the powers that be need. It gets two things. They get to buy your Bitcoin cheap because you'll panic and sell it. They get to, when the financial system breaks and they lower interest rates and they pump liquidity, they all of a sudden unite all these people that hate the administration or angry with the Democrats or angry with the Republicans. Go, oh, we're all getting money now. And then they get to, knock people out of their houses, knock people out of their cars, create this financial drama, which says, big daddy government, like, help me, please. That's exactly what they want.
Yeah.
Right. And peak anti-government, right? Even a lot of the Republicans that were hardcore MAGA are now going like, oh my God, like, what did I do? Right. And this kind of peak chaos, there's nothing better than a crisis for more control and more power and to get everybody back on your side, right? If the markets are down 40% and people are losing their jobs, do you think they're going to be talking about the Epstein list?
Do you think the Epstein list is a nothing burger?
No, I think it's an everything burger.
No, I mean from Trump's perspective. Like, I mean, Trump, that there's nothing in these latest files that are going to kind of... Or do you think it's something like they want to get Trump out so that they can install Vance? Do you know what I mean? Like, is this the take? Is this really going to take down Trump?
I hadn't thought of that.
I mean, is this something that's going to take him down by Christmas or midterms?
That's a good point.
Get an unelected Vance in, get a few years in so that he could run with a lot more credibility. And and there's some saying, some are speculating, like, maybe they're not getting everything they want out of Trump. Maybe they're getting a lot or some, but like maybe, and maybe he's just not with it on some of the more technological things they want to do around surveillance. And
I hadn't thought about that does make some sense to me. Absolutely makes sense to me. But I think the Epstein list, documents, emails, etc., will take out most of the government. Like, I don't think you get into that. I think it's a very small percentage of the people that get to that level of the government without being compromised.
Yeah, captured and corruption. Yeah, I agree.
So it would be detrimental to the entire political sphere, and there'd be a massive vacuum to fill. And then, yeah, J.D. Vance and Peter Thiel and Elon Musk.
All right, let's move on.
All right, regulatory gridlock. The U.S. government shutdown has frozen crypto legislation and SEC actions. Could this involuntary pause be a blessing, delaying harsh rules, or will the backlog unleash a fire hose of regulation once Congress returns?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what they're going to do? I think it's a blessing. When they can't get things done, I'm happier.
Right.
So, I think they want to pave the way for a lot of things. It sounds like they're going to be running out of time to do everything they wanted to do in this session because of the shutdown. So, but I don't know if it's bad or good. Most of it's usually bad. How much of it is good?
Yeah.
Right. So, right. I don't know. Let's move on to the next one. Hit like and subscribe if you're enjoying the show. This is Bitcoin Center brought for you by Byte Federal. Go bank yourself. Bitcoin's risk on correlation. Is this a bad sign? Bitcoin has crashed in lockstep with stocks. If crypto's correlation to equities remains near 1.0, can it still claim to be digital gold or merely the latest high beta gadget of the bull market? Is this really what we want to see?
I don't think there's any way to get around that when you have institutionalized Bitcoin, because I think the people that have been buying Bitcoin, the corporations that have been buying, the high net worth individuals, the ETF holders, et cetera, the treasury company buyers, they're not diamond hands, right? So yes, we are going to correlate with the overall market, but what you have to understand is a real Bitcoiner holding their own coins, you hold something that is a bearer instrument that is nobody has an IOU on it. You have custody of it. So if the financial system went to zero, Bitcoin would have greater purchasing power in that environment. It might go down to be worth $1 a coin. It would still have greater purchasing power over financialized assets than. You're going to maintain the spread, right? So like Bitcoin at 100,000, 89,000, whatever, it got there because it's priced in dollars. If the dollar went to zero, Bitcoin is still 1 to 0. Like you're still maintaining extreme purchasing power because it's a scarce asset and you have custody of it. And it's no one's IOU. You put it in an ETF, you put it in a treasury company, you give custody to Coinbase, it's going to zero. But if you have self-custody, you have the one, they have the zero. So it is digital gold. It is true value, and it is uncorrelated in regards to the way real assets work in the world. But it's priced in fiat, so it's going to correlate.
This is like therapy.
Cool. I'm glad I could help.
I mean, it's, you know... All right, let's go on to the next one. I think you're asking me.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good.
HODLer sell-off. Okay, long-term HODLers dumped a record of 815,000 BTC in 30 days.
That's why we need therapy, man. Yeah. People are dumping.
Could this be the first time the OGs cause a bear market?
I don't think so. And I don't think this is anything different than what we've seen in the past. I think just the multiples are higher because there's more inflation and the dollar's been more debased. I think it's about the same amount of people probably exiting out of the same amount of coins and along the same amount of time frame.
Something comes to mind to me in Amsterdam. Carrot, I'm going to forget the names of the other. I'm sorry, guys. There were three great, it's hard to forget Carrot, right? Holding the sign in front of his face, but there were three great on-chain analysts and they were showing charts and data.
Yeah, sure.
And in previous cycles, like we've sold off similar amounts of coins in all the cycles, but in previous cycles they came like all at once. Like they burned the top, right? And just crushed it.
Yeah.
This cycle, it's more just been a consistent drip on top of the market.
It's probably a more professional liquidation and distribution and strategic.
Yeah.
And it's probably in some ways,
right? They're not moving it to this, like Binance and just fat fingering it, right? Because they're like, oh, I've got 100 million in coins. I'm going to hire an OTC desk to bleed this into the market. Yep. And you could just see it in the chart of sellers. And it was like, oh, wow. Like here you have this bull market that's chopping and you have this selling that's chopping right underneath it. And
I'd also be curious how really much of that even distribution is from singular wallets, meaning this wallet is spitting out a steady stream versus its coins are being stolen steady.
Yeah.
And it's more like people are just reaching their natural life events and breaking points through this cycle, organically.
Right.
And people are just independently coming to the same conclusion that it's time for them to diversify. But this is the best thing for Bitcoin.
I agree.
For these coins to move to the next set of diamond hands.
Yeah, I agree.
And people grow up and move on. And I don't mean grow up meaning they lose the cause, but they have their life changes.
Yeah, this has always been this has been a critique of Bitcoin for a long time, that there was a small group of people that held a ton of coins. Well, that critique is slowly going away.
I wonder how much further we are on that curve.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I don't know.
Somebody could do that analysis, I guess, but just sort of looking at the average size of wallets.
Yep, totally.
Now compared,
right? To some sort of distribution from now to the past.
Yeah.
See how much we changed. Sure. Lightning network growth.
Mm-hmm.
Lightning usage is surging with monthly transactions up 266% year over year, and fees are plunging. Is Lightning Network finally proving it can scale for Bitcoin for everyday payments?
Yes.
I don't agree.
I agree.
I don't.
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't think Lightning is not going to be B2B still and more like.
Oh, I'm not saying it's like going to be. Well, I mean, there are some interesting.
I don't think it's the final.
There's interesting decentralized Lightning. I don't know if protocol is the right word, but software that I've seen in communicating with other vendors. So right now it is mostly centralized. The big nodes are doing lots of volume. There was a Bitcoin treasury company on a panel that I spoke at that was generating about a 14% yield annually.
Canadian.
I don't know. Don't quote me on it.
I think we did a quick review on that.
Yeah,
Canadian treasury company. They're running the test experiment over like 60 days on their Lightning node. They put in like 300 coins.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not remembering the specific name of the company, but it was very interesting. They're doing a lot of volume. They're generating great return.
Where do you think the increase in demand for all this volume? Where do you think this volume's coming? Like, is it coming from because Cash App is now using?
I mean, yeah, I think like, so for instance, right? I mean, I bought Bitcoin today on the dip. Every one of those transactions was a Lightning transaction.
Tell me how is that a Lightning transaction?
Because it was a small payment instantly.
No, but what did you use? What app?
A Byte wallet.
Okay, the Byte wallet. Because
that's a Lightning, right? And I just bang, instant, got it.
Very cool.
Right. Strike is Lightning.
Yeah.
Cash App has got Lightning. I mean, our ATMs has got Lightning. Like, Lightning's everywhere because, I mean, our POS system's got Lightning. Everything's got Lightning because it's just fast, efficient, low cost.
Right. But I don't think Lightning's going to be like Visa in this example. Like, I still think it's going to be like.
I think Lightning is going to, I think Visa is going to adopt
Lightning.
I think you'll even see stable coins running over Lightning.
Right, but people are going to use some other layer on top of Lightning to interact with that credit card or that thing. They're not going to that card's not going to run directly on Lightning.
Your credit, right? The credit that MasterCard or Visa gives you is going to move stable coins over Lightning. Because that way it can reach everybody in the world.
Yeah, we'll see.
Is that your brain ticking?
Yeah, well, that's my brain. There you go. The coin's clicking.
All right, the Swiss stablecoin law. Switzerland's government just launched a consultation to add crypto to financial laws, especially stablecoins. Does this reaffirm Switzerland's crypto-friendly stance or show that even crypto haven regulators are tightening the screws?
Both. I mean, yeah. Again,
stablecoins are here.
I don't know how they're going to be or how privacy-friendly stuff is going to be in Switzerland, but they're going to approach
the days of the Swiss bank accounts died a long time ago. Yeah. Private Bitcoin bank accounts died Swiss a long time ago.
Bitcoin is the real Swiss bank.
You can't stop the transaction, but I wouldn't say it's private.
And that's what we need to improve.
Yes,
I think.
Yeah. So, stablecoins in Switzerland. Stablecoins are going to be everywhere. And if you're Switzerland and you have to do payment processing with the rest of the world, you have to do exchange with the rest of the world. It's like, okay, I guess we're moving to stablecoins. If we're going to do stablecoins, I guess we need a regulation and a law around it. So this is just one of those, right? It's just everybody catching up. Same with Kenya, right? Russia's going to do it. China's going to come up with the yuan stablecoin. Some will be CBDCs. Some will be stablecoins. They'll be exchangeable.
Do you know Aaron Day? Have you heard of Aaron Day?
Mm-mm.
I'll be talking to him soon. He's sort of a technologist. He kind of looks at sort of, you know, how AI is impacting the future. But he's kind of a Roger Ver sort of disciple, or I don't know if disciple is the word, but supporter. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but also maybe a big blocker.
Mm.
But it'll be interesting. I'm kind of curious to kind of have that conversation again.
Mm-hmm.
Just for kind of making sure that I'm not missing anything.
Maybe, you know, I just thought of something. Maybe Roger really is pro small blocks, but pushed the big block in order to be able to liquidate, because he's spending all his Bitcoin cash to be able to liquidate the big blockers while he holds on to a small block Bitcoin.
I don't know. I think that he really believed that big blocks were better for making Bitcoin money.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to... I'm not saying he's right, but I think that there's...
Do you think he sold Bitcoin?
All of it? No, not at all. I don't.
Think he held it and just spent Bitcoin cash because it was cheaper to spend?
I think he spent some Bitcoin, probably finance. I mean, if he had 100,000 coins, he could have...
I mean, he just...
parted with 50,000 coins and still had 50,000 coins.
Right.
And he could have done that over 10 years.
I wish he'd come back.
He's talk back.
To us. No, I mean, like...
I would talk to Roger.
I would love to talk to him.
Yeah, I would. I want to hear more. I mean, Roger was one of the best orange pillars ever.
Yeah, the Bitcoin Jesus.
And so I want to understand.
I loved his
passion,
man. I mean, I was like,
and sort of always off the reserve,
all
and
in ego, on,
or what the genuine belief is, and maybe big blocks are still wrong, but maybe there's some. I want to hear about the money. The Bitcoin is money.
Yeah,
Bitcoin is as medium exchange.
Yeah, and he really understood Bitcoin very well from the perspective of how it would impact governments, impact humanity, stop the forever wars. I mean, I really learned a lot from him. And
I've never seen anyone try to use Bitcoin.
Went off the rails so rapidly with the big block deal. And at the end of the day, I got rid of all my Bcash and went all in on Bitcoin. And
I wasn't around early enough.
Like believing in just Bitcoin, and the big blocks were wrong because of this centralization impact with mining. So,
Bitcoin hasn't gotten everything right since that.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we can segue it and tap.
No, I know.
So I think there's things to kind of read the tea leaves there and try to see what we're not seeing.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, moving on. MicroStrategy faces MNAV drop.
Mm-hmm.
With MicroStrategy's MNAV slipping below one and fears of forced liquidation rising, even as Saylor doubles down on buying more Bitcoin, does this mark the first real stress test of the leveraged Bitcoin treasury model in a volatile market? Fuck yeah, it does.
I don't think it puts.
They went through a lot of stress in 2022.
Yeah, yeah.
They were below
exactly.
one.
Yeah.
But this is under a much bigger microscope.
So I think the bigger
calling a lot more attention to themselves.
I think strategy
broke the peg the other day.
Strategy, I think, is going to be fine.
Okay.
But I think whatever this pullback slash recession is that we're in Bitcoin, you will know it's over when you start to see second tier, third tier Bitcoin treasury companies going private, getting bought at a deep discount,
sure.
Collapsing, you name it, right?
And probably like, everything is second tier.
Like you can't, Microsoft, you Microsoft. Cannot build companies that are dependent on Bitcoin price going up.
So do you think the days of like, a greater like, than one MNAV are over forever? Do you think 1.8 or 2 are bad?
No, I think you're going to see companies that develop.
Can you make the argument? What about the argument that these Bitcoin treasury companies, of course, should be worth less than an ETF because you have management risk.
Mm-hmm.
You have.
They should trade like a close. If they have no business model. They have no business.
You
if
have their only business stock model, options, right? Executives.
If their only business model is holding Bitcoin, then they are tied to the price of Bitcoin. Period. And so then they're going to trade like a closed-end Bitcoin ETF,
right.
Like GBTC,
right.
That I think at one time had like a 70% discount. Is that right? I don't know if it got that deep.
At least 50.
At least, yeah, it was a pretty significant discount.
And it went from a positive, a premium. Yeah.
So maybe it was a. When you include the premium,
negative, like, but it was up like 30-40%,
right? So
50% premium.
Maybe that's what I remembered was like a 70% drop.
That fund was designed.
Yeah. So I think you're gonna see. You know, I think that will be really the what will ring the bell on the end of this pullback.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our show for tonight. This is brought to you by Federal Bitcoin Center, number 29, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Hit like and subscribe. Maybe we have some questions or comments in the chat.
Please. Yeah.
We do no questions, unfortunately. Yeah.
Bueller. All right. Send your letters to Alligator Alcatraz. Hopefully we'll receive them. And
we get to make one phone call a day. So
we'll get out of our prison here and back into a studio shortly. And again, Cedric is not suicidal. So
good to know.
Yeah, it's good to know.
Thanks for letting me know what I'm thinking. All right. This is Bitcoin Center. My name is Cedric Youngelman.
I'm Paul Tarantino. Good night.
Go bank yourself. Have a great night.
Peace out.